League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Well, just over 3 weeks since we last went racing, which quite frankly does feel like a lifetime. It's back. It's race week. Going to Spa.
Yeah, and everyone who has suffered and sweltered under these massive drought conditions all summer, don't worry, it's going to be over very soon because we're going to Spa. And we're going to send Natalie out there, aren't we?
Oh, yes. Thanks, David. I look forward to that. I've only just dried out from last year.
If you're wondering why you're getting the show a day early, it's because from now on, we're going to be releasing F1 Nation on a Monday. And can I just say, this has been the busiest summer break in Formula One that I can remember for a long time. There's been so much going on. But before we get into all that, welcome to F1 Nation with Damon Hill, Natalie Pinkham, and me, Tom Clarkson. So Spa is going to look very different this year because since last year, they've spent 80 million euros. First of all, they put a new grandstand at Eau Rouge, and there are hospitality suites now going all the way down the hill towards Eau Rouge on the left-hand side. So they've poured all this money into the track. It's a sellout again.
Well, why wouldn't it be?
What is there not to like about Spa?
We are going into the next few races, apart from Monza, the next few races, we are going into the heart of the beast, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to the homeland, the birthplace of the great Max Verstappen and all those Flemish-speaking people, in whether they're Belgian or Dutch, they are going to be there supporting Max. So it's going to be absolutely a Max fest these next two races.
And it's not much like he needs it. He's got an 80-point lead in the championship, which, I mean, it's just hard to see anyone overturning that, not least Charles Leclerc. What do we think?
Well, particularly at Spa, Pinks, let's not forget that Red Bull have phenomenal straight-line speed, and two of the three sectors at Spa are effectively a straight line. So that thing is going to be like a bullet on those two. Then you've got a slightly twistier middle section where I think actually the Mercedes is going to be very strong. But overall, I think Max Verstappen is going to be super competitive this weekend at Spa. Can he add to the 8 race wins he's had already this year? 8 of the 13 races this year he's already won. And I think he goes into the Belgian Grand Prix as favourite.
And are you the top stat man, Tom? Are you going to be our top stat man? Can you confirm whether never before in the history of Formula One, someone with an 80-point lead at this point has ever lost a world championship? We're not looking at foregone conclusion, are we? Please tell me that.
Well, I don't think you need to be a top stat man to say, yeah, that's never happened before. I mean, it's a phenomenal lead, isn't it? And you know, if Charles Leclerc does what Sebastian Vettel did back in 2013 and wins every single race after the summer break,
he can still win the world championship, even if Max finishes second in every race. But it's going to require that kind of magic from Ferrari and Leclerc to overturn it. Otherwise, I think Max can actually win the world title as early as the Singapore Grand Prix.
Don't forget, there are other things at stake. I mean, Lewis Hamilton is looking, staring down the barrel of a season without having won a Grand Prix. Could he pull something off in Spa? That car has been getting better. And also, we've got the aerodynamic oscillation matrix as well to explain to everyone, which is this new thing which they brought in. The FIA have said, basically, we don't want to damage our drivers. And so if we see excessive amounts of porpoising and bouncing like this, we can bring in, take some steps to change the way the cars are set up. And that could have a bearing, don't you think, Tom?
Red Bull and Ferrari probably the most affected.
Yep, absolutely right. I think you could see Mercedes pulling themselves further up. And the irony of all this is that where we left off in Hungary a month ago, Mercedes was the fastest car. So they've sort of engineered their way out of the problems they were having anyway. Now, I think it seems that Red Bull and Ferrari, as you say, Pinks, are going to be brought back towards them. So I think they're going to be really competitive this weekend. And Damon, tell me if I'm wrong, but I find when I look at the middle section at Spa and look at those long radius corners, quite a lot of it reminds me of Hungary, that middle section I'm talking about.
None of it reminds me of Hungary, Tom. So I would never...
But when you look at...
I never actually say you're wrong, but I think you might be wrong.
But when
one.
You look at Les Combes, yeah. I'm reminded of the fast chicane at Hungary. Then you've got Rivage, that long hairpin reminds me of Turn 1 at Hungary. Then, okay, Puhon is easy flat now, I think, or very small lift. And then...
Well, there's two problems. I mean, one is that at Hungary, you basically have a lot of downforce on the car anyway. So the tight and twisty corners at Hungary, you've got the most downforce you need, which you can't do that at Spa because of the long straights, as you just mentioned. So cars are running, if they're in a section, which is like the complex down at the bottom of the hill, is it Stavelo and that bit at the end there, or at the top of the hill, the after the long straight, those tight twisty bits are similar in some ways to Hungary, but you're running with minimal wing, so you know you have to adopt a different, slightly different setup, slightly different driving style to cope with those corners. But the speed, high speed corners, because these cars generate so much downforce at high speed, you know, the lack of wing isn't such a problem. In fact, you probably are over. You've got too much downforce for some of those corners. So it's a really lovely track to drive on because you can feel the car accelerate, especially out of Puhon. You come down the hill after the corner with no name, which is a tight left-hander, running up on a curb, beautiful. And your car just runs because it's going downhill anyway. And you get to Puhon, you turn in, and it goes on and on and on this corner. And you feel like you're falling off the edge of the track the whole time. And then as you get to the very end, the car is just spat out of Puhon at, I'm not sure what speed it is we're going, but it's a great little section. It really gives you a thrill to drive on. And it's got legs, this circuit. You know, can actually let these cars run for a good distance because, what is it, 5 mile track or something like that?
Do you know what, TC, I'm with the champ on this one. He is, after all, a multiple winner at Spa.
Well, he is. Yeah, he is. Three times, Damon, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I won in F3 as well there. I loved it every time I went there. Well, I won't say I loved it because there were times when I was absolutely terrified. In fact, when my dad went there back in the early days when he didn't have any runoff, he came in after that and sat there and said to the mechanics, I don't think I can do F1 because he was so scared. I mean, it really was a frightening circuit. But when it rains, you cannot see a thing. So you're coming up the hill or down the straight after Radion. You're just going into a white wall. You can't see a mist. You know, you know there's someone there, but you can't see where they are. And in 98, when I won, I actually came out of the corner at the bottom of the hill and I went into the spray and I bounced off the side of a car.
And into the wall. Who was that?
Coulthard. Coulthard in the wall.
David Coulthard into the wall. We'll stop the race.
They'll
stop
have to
the
red,
race.
They'll have to
oh,
red
this
flag
is terrible.
This.
Appalling. This is the worst start for a Grand Prix that I have ever seen in the whole of my life.
I never even knew he was there. And I looked over and there was a car in it because I suddenly felt this nudge. And there was, I think it was Jarno Trulli, who looked a bit surprised. But, you know, I had no idea there was a car there.
So just explain to us, who will never know or understand this feeling, what is it like just to have to drive on instinct?
Well, it makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. I mean, basically every little... sensation has to be on full alert, and you really have to just drive, because you can't tell if you're going to hit a deep river or a puddle of some sort, you know. So you're just constantly on red alert, even on the straights, to hear if the engine revs are going to go up. You know, you're going to suddenly aquaplane. It means you're wired. You're absolutely wired to be able to survive every, you know, because you don't even get a rest even on the straights, because you can spin off on the straights. And anyway, a lot of the straights have got slight curves in them as well, and rivers coming down them. So, you know, it is phenomenal experience. I have to say, you know, I could only take so much of that. Pretty soon after the 98 race, I retired from Formula One, having had enough of that. But, you know, it was fun while you're young. Again, you know, it's one of those things that you feel very proud of if you can master a race in the wet. Of course, Michael Schumacher was the rain master around that circuit. And Max Verstappen is really very, very similar, as is Lewis, in these conditions. They can cope with anything.
It's amazing, isn't it, Spa? Because it feels as if it is a real test of human and machinery alike. It punishes mistakes, but does reward that bit of magic if you can pull it out of somewhere. I'm thinking about George Russell in quali last year. Now, obviously, we all know what happened with the race. It was a complete washout, but it felt as if he got a reward for the bravery that he showed in qualifying.
Yeah, that was phenomenal, wasn't it? That was one of those standout performances that we mark out particular drivers who've got astonishing skill. And of course, mustn't forget Lando did something similar in Russia as well. But so, you know, these drivers, they pop up out of nowhere when the conditions are really tricky, don't they?
Oh, and Lando was fastest in Q2, wasn't he, last year?
And then a massive crash.
At Eau Rouge, didn't he? But I mean, he was absolutely hooked up. And so look out for him, I think, this weekend as well.
If the conditions are iffy, then look out for the great drivers, the guys who've got that, you know, sparkling extra 2% or 5% or whatever it is they have. It comes out in these situations. They just rise to those occasions.
Based on that, do you think the drivers love Spa? Or do you think they revere it? You think that they approach it with some trepidation, or do you just throw yourself into a challenge like this?
I don't know anyone who doesn't like Spa. I can't remember hearing a driver saying, I don't like this place.
Or Jim Clark.
Yeah, but you're going back to when they had no barriers and it just went through the woods and you know, you just went off into a field. It was like the Isle of Man TT. It was a totally different circuit in those days. You know, it has got a lot safer, thankfully, but sadly, because of serious accidents, you know, and we've had plenty of those round Spa, you know, so it's got a risk factor, and I think that adds the spice. Controversially, I'm going to say that, you know, I think that danger is part of the thing that makes drivers, it challenges drivers. Obviously, Stirling Moss was very much someone who considered the danger as one of the challenges of the sport, and you know, it's a driver's job to overcome fear. But we don't want to see people getting hurt. I'm afraid we've had too many of those, at least a couple of fatalities at Spa. And things have to change in order to try and protect the drivers. So, but it doesn't lessen the thrill and the skill needed to perform well on that circuit.
And one of the skills I think you need at Spa to perform well is to make it through lap one, because there's always a bit of argy-bargy at La Source, the first corner, isn't there? And you've got to make it clean through there to, obviously, you know, that old adage.
Is that the shortest run to the first corner, apart from Monaco?
Yeah, and so they're all tripping over each other. And, of course, you're then desperate to get a clean run out of there because of the long straight that follows up to Les Combes.
And also down through the first part of Radion, when they come through. Remember that pass with Weber and Alonso? That was just absolutely thrilling and terrifying at the same time.
Balletic, yeah.
Yeah, two guys totally respecting each other there through that corner. And they managed to pull off a great display of driving. And of course, you know, not forgetting, you know, Mika Hakkinen and Michael Schumacher going either side of, and Mika Hakkinen overtaking Michael by going the other side of the bat marker, whose name I forget.
Ricardo Zonta.
Ricardo Zonta. Yeah. So hi, Ricardo, if you're listening.
Damon, another challenge it feels, and I think this is something about the aesthetic of Spa, these rolling Ardennes hills, and you know, you arrive to this sort of sea of greenness, and it's beautiful, but the elevation change, 100 metres between the highest and lowest points, how difficult is that to manage?
It's not difficult. The downhill stuff is more difficult than uphill. When you've got a corner that's actually dropping away like Pujon on the entry, you just get a feeling like you're going to fall off the edge of it. So it's kind of a mental trick. You have to convince yourself that when you start to turn in, the car is not going to just go flying off into the gravel trap there. But other than that, I love undulations. It's a roller coaster. That's one of the thrilling things about it. And actually, when you get up to the top at Virage and you turn around to that, as I said, the corner with no name just before Pujon, you can see all the way up to the paddock. So you can see how far you've travelled. You can see right the way across to the other side of the valley. It just adds to the thrill of the whole experience of racing at Spa. It's a circuit which actually covers some space, some ground, you know, and it's, as you said, it's through the forest as well. So you get a feeling like you've been let loose to really see what a Formula One car can do.
And TC, they talk about it being a track that rewards efficiency. Can you just explain what that means? Because you alluded to the fact that there are these contrasting sections of the track, one that rewards straight line speed and the other that would favour those that are set up well for twisty, tight corners and long radius corners as well. So how on earth do you strike the perfect balance?
Really hard, isn't it, Pinks? And actually, qualifying is really hard on many levels at Spa because the lap is so long. You're looking at 1 minute 45. You get fewer goes at it, so you get fewer laps. So you have to be on it from lap one. And if you suddenly want to make a change, by the time you've come back into the pits, made a setup change and got back out, you're probably running out of time. So you have to plan the session very carefully. And then, as you say, do you go for higher downforce, which would slow you down along the straights in sector one and sector three, but make you incredibly fast through sector two, through the twists of sector two? Or do you go for greater straight line speed? But that, of course, will compromise you in sector two. And of course, over a race distance, that will have an effect on tyre wear. Now, that is the challenge of Spa. And you see every year teams approaching it differently. You've got DRS zones, of course, one on the start-finish straight and then one going up to Les Combes at the end of Sector 1. I don't know, Damon, what did you used to do? I think you normally see teams go more towards a race, being fast in the race, fast in a straight line, because that, you know, makes overtaking easier. So I think that's what more people go towards, but it is a compromise, isn't it?
One of the problems with it is you wake up on race morning and it's teeming with rain and you've set up your car to run with low downforce. Now, you, in those days, you could change it when I was racing, but you can't now. So you're stuck with what you've got. So you've got to, you cannot set up a car to be, unless you're absolutely dead certain it's going to be wet, 100% wet for the whole race. You can't really set it up for a wet race, you know. So they will run with minimal wing. You're absolutely right. The thing to do is, or the goal is to make the aero efficiency on the car as good as possible. So that includes things like, you know, the level of the rake. And they've got this new rule that they've brought in now. And as I understand it, it's a stop flexing of the floor at the back. So we might see some cars having to change the way they set up the car. So this will be a real test for some cars that may have contravened that regulation. It's been picked up by the FIA and it's to stop the rear of the floor flexing. That might change the way they set up their car. But if you get the base of the car producing the most efficient downforce, then you can peel off some wing off the rear, off the flap, which is what you really want to do. And that keeps a good base for you to handle the car through the fast corners, but slippery down the straight. So yeah, definitely move towards as little downforce as possible. The cars at the back, unfortunately, because they don't have as good aero efficiency, if they run less wing, they basically just go slower. So you might find them sometimes opting to have more wing on just so they get a quicker lap time, and they are not going to be passing people on the straight. They're at the back anyway.
Quicker lap time and then praying for rain in the race.
Possibly.
To weave your two points together, when you think about how big this track is, there will be parts where it's raining and others where it's not.
Yeah, that's true.
Just to make it even more challenging.
Completely. Yeah, I mean, it covers two valleys. It's basically in a valley, isn't it? But it goes into another valley, I think. So, yeah, it can get areas where it's wet. And we've had that before. So plenty of excitement. And it's great on TV as well. That's the other thing, is that one of the things with our sport is to get the impression of speed. You know, you sometimes you miss it with some of the circuits we go to. But with Spa, you can see, you know, as they go up the Kemmel Straight and the helicopters trying to chase them up the hill, then you get some idea of how fast these cars are.
And then if you factor into all of this, the fact that it is the first of a triple header, that is another headache, challenge, whatever you want to call it for the teams in terms of, well, I know we've had a lovely little break now, but the break has only been as long as the triple header will be. So really, in the whole scheme of things, it's not that much downtime, is it?
Yeah, and if Charles Leclerc is going to do anything about this world championship fight with Max, he has to win these three races. He has to leave Monza in 3 weeks' time with three more wins under his belt, 75 points, hopefully a few, three more for fastest lap as well. And if he doesn't, and Max is just being Mr. Consistent, that's all he needs to be now, Max. It's Mr. Consistent, really. And but so it's, in a way, for Charles, it's an easy objective. I have to win these races and be completely uncompromising in his approach. But he has to do that. So three Charles Leclerc wins. And I think for that reason, we might see Carlos Sainz playing second fiddle at Ferrari as well. If Carlos is in a position to win or can move over and help Charles, I think he will. Team player is Carlos.
I mean, the other thing is this triple header, after the debacle of Hungary for Ferrari, that's in the back of their mind as well. They've got to be on a good run going into Monza. You don't want to turn up at Monza having had your pants kicked for the last four races. Last three races, if you know, by the time you get to Monza, Ferrari will be determined to come out of the blocks after the summer break, having put to bed all the criticisms that they've had. So I don't know where they've got there. They will have been done a lot of talking over that. Although they have a summer break and a factory shut down for 2 weeks, it doesn't stop them using the telephone or the internet or whatever they communicate on Zoom calls. There'll be some interesting meetings going on, I should think, over that break.
When you've had a bad result, you want to get back racing as soon as possible. But it does feel as if Ferrari needed to sort of just take time to reflect and calm down and talk, as you say, Damon, with one another about how they can approach the second half of the season. Do you think any changes will be made? I mean, Mattia Binotto has been clear that there won't be personnel changes.
No, I think once you start throwing people out of the balloon, you know, then it frightens everyone else. So nobody wants to be the next person. So you have to not do that. And I think Mattia has basically said that, listen, we're fine. It will take care of it. We'll fix it. You know, we'll look into what we've done. But the pressure's on him, really, because he's the guy in charge. He's the front man now, and so he can only say so many times, we've taken steps to, you know, I have every faith in my strategy people. And he can only say that so many times. If it doesn't get fixed, then, as I said, you know, by the time you get to Monza, he could be feeling the heat a little bit.
Well, there's nowhere to hide, is there?
They won't let you know. And that's how it is. That's sport. You know, that's the nature of our business, is a lot of attention. And we're some of the people who actually put attention on them, you know, both with the Sky coverage and our team. And we like to look at, analyze the sport, and here on this podcast we like to, as the fans do, they like to go, okay, well, understand what's going wrong. If something's not going right, they want to know why, and we have to somehow get inside those teams and find out. And of course, they're very protective about the truth of what's going on in their organizations as well. They might be, because they don't want their opponents taking sucker from their failings.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Shall we just dissect what's gone on over the last couple of weeks in terms of, we were supposed to all have a bit of a break. I don't think it's ever been so busy in the summer holidays in terms of what on earth is going on with the driver market.
Well, you guys were on holiday when Alonso made his move to Aston Martin, right? What did you make of it? Is it the right thing for him? Is it the right thing for Aston Martin?
I was very surprised that he'd gone to Aston Martin. I mean, you know, obviously when Seb went, it was an opening, but it's a kind of, you know, the kind of guy that Fernando Alonso is and the kind of guy that Lawrence Stroll is and the ambitions they have for the team. I just can't see. I mean, why would you want to end your, let's be honest, you know, Fernando is going to have to retire eventually. So it's possibly the last team he'll be with. You don't want to be with a team that is struggling and having frustrations. And so either he's been convinced that there's some massive turnaround that's going to take place. It can't be the money. I just don't believe that he'd just do it just for the money. I can't.
I mean, I think they're at the bottom of the trough. It can't be much worse than it is now, can it?
Yeah, but we said that about Williams a few years ago, didn't we? We looked at Williams, went,
there's difference here. There's a difference here in that Aston Martin have lots of money. They've made some really good signings on the aerodynamic side over the last 12 months. Mm. They've got a new factory. I mean, I'm sounding like this is probably what Lawrence Stroll said to Fernando.
You're selling it to me.
We've got a new factory coming on. Oh, you want a 2-year contract? Straight 2 years. We can do that. Oh, do you want to be an ambassador for the rest of your life as well? Yeah, we can probably do that as well. You know. So I can understand why he's done it. I think they are going to get better because they can't actually get any worse. They're currently ninth in the world. Okay, they can get one place worse, but you know what I mean. It's going to get better. And I think Fernando Alonso loves the thought of being the man that turns it around for them. I think that appeals to the ego, doesn't it, of anyone. You want to be the main man. And I think the combination of his ambition with Lawrence Stroll's ambition could be unbelievably effective.
Let's assess what Fernando Alonso's contribution has been to Alpine in his time there. I think that he has, a team like Alpine want to be a serious player, and they had a serious player in Fernando. Yes, you can have Esteban Ocon's and other drivers, but Fernando has this charisma about him and this reputation. He's totally no nonsense. He's totally businesslike. He goes in there and he picks up the team on what they need to focus on, and he's directing things, it seems to me, even from the cockpit. So I think he's been a real asset to Alpine, but they've been caught out. This totally surprised them that he was going to jump and go to somewhere else.
Well, do you know, I remember, Damon, at the French Grand Prix, Laurent Rossi, who is the boss of Alpine road cars and racing activities, was asked a question about Fernando's future, and he talked about Fernando being part of their Le Mans program, because Alpine have a Le Mans program. And I remember thinking, I wonder if that is actually a selling point for Fernando. You know, he is so focused on Formula One. Offering him a 1-year deal with the potential to go and do Le Mans with Alpine, I'm not sure that's going to wash. And Alonso obviously just held off. And then as soon as midnight on July the 31st came and went, off he went.
He's already won Le Mans, hasn't he? He just needs Indianapolis. And then he equals my dad's triple crown record. But, you know, if Alpine had offered him a guaranteed winning car for the Indianapolis 500, maybe he would have stuck around.
Do you agree that Aston Martin will be more of a force in 2023?
I think the bigger question in all of this, chaps, is why don't people want to drive for Alpine? Why did Daniel leave in its last iteration of Renault? Why did Fernando leave? Why did Piastri jump and say, no, I'm not driving for this team? They're above McLaren in the table. It's a fast car. Why don't more drivers want to go there? Why didn't Piastri jump and grab that opportunity with both hands?
Pinks, do you remember in Monaco, you and I were discussing on this show after the race, about who will drive for McLaren. And we discussed the prospects of Piastri going there. And at the time, I felt it made sense for both, because Piastri was frustrated that he wasn't racing this year. Daniel was having his problems, and he is undoubtedly a great talent. So I actually understand why Piastri's gone, because at the time when he started his negotiations with McLaren, I think he thought perhaps that it was going to be Alonso and Ocon staying at Alpine.
Or maybe he just thought McLaren's a better proposition in terms of a racing car. But I don't know why that is, because the McLaren is clearly a handful. You know, you're talking about an eight-time race winner in Daniel Ricciardo struggling to get to grips with his car. There is no guarantee for Piastri that he is going to be able to drive as well as or better than Lando Norris in that car.
Well, that's a whole nother question, isn't it? And why Piastri? Undoubtedly, he's good. He's an F3 champion. He's an last year's F2 champion. Won 6 races in F2 last year. But for a man who has never even driven in an official F1 session, there's a lot of scrapping over him.
He's clearly good. I'm just thinking about the nuances of this McLaren. And you would have thought that perhaps he knew the workings of Alpine better. Maybe he didn't like what he saw. I don't know. Look, we're speculating. It is all conjecture. And I think more will become clear. But it is quite incredible with Fernando's cheeky little move there, the domino effect that it has had on the sport. And we go into the second half of the season not much clearer.
You say also, Pinks, why does no one want to drive for Alpine? But surely it's a really good home for Daniel Ricciardo. I know he left after 2 years there, but actually year two was really strong. Yeah. There were podium finishes. Yeah. I felt he was really happy there, and I was surprised that he jumped to McLaren when he did.
Yeah, that's true as well. And there's been a personnel change. Obviously, Cyril Abiteboul has left. The dynamic within the team is slightly different. I mean, I really think that Alpine has a lot to offer.
Do we think Daniel wants to carry on? Is he another driver who's starting to, you know, look further afield and the rest of his life? And you know, if you look at Sebastian's announcement on his Instagram page, he's made 2 posts on Instagram apparently, and he's got 2.2 million followers. But anyway, they're just his retirement announcement in German and in English. So, but you know, he's talked about the fact that there's more to life, and I get this feeling with Daniel that, you know, he's kind of excited about life after F1 a little bit.
I think there's a significant difference there. Seb has 3 kids. He's married with 3 children. His priorities have shifted. I felt personally, when I heard Daniel overtake the 2 Alpines at the last race, and you just felt the punchiness in his voice, he's still got the hunger.
Daniel Ricciardo picks off both of them during the course of a couple of corners.
Go. He still really wants it.
This has been a very interesting, from my point of view as a driver, I look at the performances of drivers going up and down now, depending on which teams they go to. And some drivers can't drag a performance out of a car. And I'm asking myself, what is it about these regulations and the cars that they have now that's so restrictive for some drivers? If you cast your mind back to the start of the season when Sergio was doing quite well, he was very happy with his car and he was winning races, and Max wasn't so happy. Now Max is happier with his car. He's changed the basic setup and it switched it around a little bit with them. But you know, you have someone like Daniel who's got loads of experience, goes to a team at McLaren, just cannot get the damn thing to work. Now, what is that? And I'm mystified, because I always thought they, you know, I have had experiences like that where I've they changed the regs and they went to groove tires, and I just couldn't drive. I didn't. The chewing gum lost its favour. I just could not enjoy driving these cars with these groove tires on. But I was also near the point of retiring, so I kind of had 2 factors dragging me backwards a little bit. But you know, when you're still a force to be reckoned with, as Daniel is, I think, you know, he's still got a lot to offer. Why is it that they can't make the car suit him? Now, the more I've listened to engineers talking and people talking, I was listening to a very interesting conversation about the difference between drivers that race in the States and the way they drive in the States. And they, you know, they come to F1, and there, the problem is there's so much learning to do with an F1 car, and drivers take almost a year to learn all the knobs and the buttons that they have on F1 cars from team to team, because they have so many different layers of complexity that, you know, now it's become not so easy to just jump in a car and be quick. And it takes maybe more than 2 seasons. Well, Daniel's been there for 2 seasons. It took Fernando about 2 seasons in Alpine, or at least the season.
But Damon, isn't that the point, that Fernando struggled in year one at Alpine.
Yeah.
And in year two, he's now a force to be reckoned with. That hasn't happened for Daniel at McLaren. So maybe, you know, is the engineering team at Alpine a change for Daniel to some fresh ideas could really benefit him?
But it's an aspect of our sport and the challenge that drivers, what they're actually, their job is as a driver these days. It's much more about being, you know, being working with engineers and also working with changes to the car that are much more subtle and technical and to do with the steering wheel than it is the knobs and buttons on the steering wheel than it is with, to do with the pedals and the brakes and the accelerator, you know. So that's where I'm struggling to get to into the mindset or the experience of being a Formula One driver these days, and also the simulator as well, you know, how much they use the simulator or how much, whether they're making the simulator the car like the simulator or whether they're making, you know, the simulator like the car. And you know, we're entering a very strange dimension, I feel, with the job of a driver these days. I mean, it's fundamentally, they've got to be quick. They've got to be competitive. They've got to be wanting to win, which I don't think, you know, I think Daniel and Fernando both have those qualities and they're both can win. But well, anyway, we've done a lot of speculation here on the reasons why Daniel Ricciardo's not quick and why Fernando's left Alpine. You know, who is going to drive for Alpine? That's there's a space going.
Well, I think it'll be Daniel Ricciardo, and I think as disappointed as we all are that it's going to end like this for Daniel Ricciardo at McLaren, I think Piastri and Norris is a pretty exciting prospect, actually. Two young guns. Lando, undoubtedly, in my mind, right up there with Leclerc and Russell and Verstappen in terms of speed. And Piastri, we don't know yet, but everything points to him being exciting. So that's a pretty exciting driver lineup at McLaren next year.
And then you're talking about Lando being the experienced driver in the team and Piastri being the new guy, which is how quickly it changes, doesn't it? Because, you know, he's still very young, as far as I'm concerned, anyway, but new to the sport. But, you know, he's got how many races now, Lando? He must have.
I'm going for 80.
Yeah, something around there. But anyway, it's this frightening speed with which drivers become experienced because they're starting so young these days and they get loads of seasons under their belts. And before you know it, they're topping the ton.
So we talked about Alpine, we talked about McLaren. But also this has ramifications for Williams, because I think Williams for quite a long time have thought Piastri was going to be racing for them in 2023. And there was even talk of a Renault engine deal coming their way as part of the contract. So if Piastri is now going to McLaren, what do Williams do with their second seat? Because, of course, Alex Albon has re-signed on a multi-year contract. So what happens to their second seat? Do they think they're going to have a much better car next year, in which case, do they go for a young gun, or do they keep with Nicholas Latifi, who brings some money with him, and just until everything settles down at Williams, is that a good number two option? Jos Capito and his guys have got all that to think about.
Exactly right. You know, the sport as well is in a good place as well. Perhaps it's not appropriate to talk about it, but they've just announced their results, and and it's looking quite profitable, and the teams are getting more money. So they don't necessarily, that might have an effect on driver market, because it might mean that the teams don't necessarily need top up budgets from drivers. So that would be an ideal situation, is if you have, you know, they'll pick the talent rather than over the budget that the driver brings.
72. I'm not talking about Damon's age in September. I am talking about how many F1 races Lando Norris has taken part in.
Thank you, Natalie. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm getting there. That's for sure. It will be.
By the way, Damon is so lovely, TC. He's actually putting on a whole golf day for my birthday.
Yes, it should be called the Natalie Pinkham's birthday golf day, but it's not. It's called the Damon Hill Golf Challenge. So, but are you playing? Are you coming? Are you actually going to turn up? You are coming.
100% in. Okay. I'm in.
Are you two going to play together? Are you going to be a pairing?
No, we're not. Don't you remember him saying he doesn't like to spend time with his Sky One colleagues? Sky One colleagues.
I put them in another team. I would stay away from them as much as possible because anyway, but no, I'm teasing. But it's a charity fundraising thing for a charity that I support called Halo, which is a learning disabilities charity. So
it's on the 20th of September. I'm telling you that so that you all support Damon and that you send me birthday cards.
And I don't forget, it's your birthday.
Just when we thought you couldn't pack any more into the summer break, something that happened right at the end of it. Kimi Raikkonen went back racing, this time in NASCAR. And great to see, wasn't it?
He was really quick, Pinks. He was at Watkins Glen and he qualified, I think, 27th, faster than Danny Kvyat, who's also riding in NASCAR at the minute. And by all accounts, he loved it. I don't know if you've seen any YouTube footage, but in every single interview, the Iceman is melting. He's just laughing and clearly having a great time. And then he was taken out of the race by, it sort of got involved in someone else's accident, unfortunately. But I think he was quite quick. So I think we might see him do more of that.
Well, you just, some people, you're never going to get out of a racing car or some sort of speedy, you know, missile, projectile type thing, are you? I mean, he'll be doing everything because he's always done it, and that's what he loves doing. He loves going fast.
That takes us back to the earlier point of when these guys make the decision to retire really does define the rest of their lives, because, you know, they've still got the appetite. It never leaves you, does it? So picking the right point to retire is crucial. On a personal level, in terms of your own ambition, in terms of your family, in terms of your fans, it's a very difficult decision to make.
I think it all does depend on your personal circumstances and your makeup. I mean, you could not get two more different characters than Kimi Raikkonen and Sebastian Vettel. So, I mean, you think about what Sebastian Vettel's talking about wanting to do in retirement versus, you know, Kimi does not say much, but he loves his racing. He loves his fast cars. I was listening to Beat Zonda's your interview, Tom, with him on Beyond the Grid. Absolutely fascinating. And they clearly had a very soft spot for Kimi and regarded him as just one of the most amazing talents that we've ever had in the sport. But he was very, you know, famously didn't really say much, you know, so we kind of, you know, maybe he missed opportunities and but he's out there now, carrying on and hopefully getting his thrills driving something else. I wish F1 drivers were allowed to drive more varied cars, because I think they'd learn a lot about our sport if they could just go and drive something else every now and then. I think that they get stuck in a rut, honestly, in F1 because of the nature of the formula. But, you know, drivers getting more experience, as they used to do in the 60s and the 70s, they would drive everything. You know, they became more rounded drivers and more useful to teams as well, because they could bring back feedback from various different experiences.
Oh, Damon, what a segue back into Alonso and Daniel Ricciardo. Do you think one of the reasons Alonso has overcome the troubles of last year is because of all the experience he has racing other stuff, IndyCar, Le Mans?
Absolutely. It's got to help, hasn't it? Doing something. I mean, on a really banal level, I went on holiday and I had a hire car for a week. I drove that hire car. I came back, I drove my own car, and I suddenly felt my own car was completely different to what I remembered it. You know, there were, and I'd never have known that if I had not tried a different car. So, you know, you learn from trying all sorts of different wild, you know, sometimes we used to do wild setups on our car just to see what happened, you know, just to see how different this thing could feel. So, yeah, I think it's interesting him getting, I'm sure he'll be really fascinated to be driving that car and be very interested to see how Kimi's going to get on with his career, racing career, after retiring. I didn't know he was going to carry on racing, but apparently he is.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Questions, please.
Damon Hill, do you think it's time maybe you should change your approach to racing?
Well, I don't even know how to start answering that question, but anyway.
It's the Williams leading, Damon Hill!
Some more questions, please.
Damon, were you happy with the start?
Damon Hill, congratulations for this winning, Damon. You must be satisfied.
Any questions? Yeah.
Well, Damon, it must have been absolutely gutting that last couple of laps.
Damon, it looked like he had it really under control.
Some more questions, please.
Damon Hill has done a fantastic job!
Okay, well, now for my favourite bit of the show, as ever, it is Ask Damon. What have the fans got for you this week, Mr. Hill?
I tremble in anticipation.
Hi, Damon. I'm Chan from London. I love the podcast. All three of you have a hilarious sense of humour, so keep doing what you're doing. I'm sure we can agree that silly season has been quite the roller coaster already with the Piastri and Alpine drama. And as I was being reminded that Oscar Piastri is managed by Mark Webber, it got me thinking, and I'm quite fascinated by what that relationship is like. So my question is, Damon, if you could manage any driver, past or present, who would you choose and why? Thanks.
Sean, that's a really interesting question. I just want to turn it around slightly and say, what driver would want to have me as a manager? That might be a more important part of this equation, because managing a driver is part of psychology, I think, as much as anything else. But you definitely need the business now, so you need someone who understands how to do deals and do the contract side of things. As we've seen with the Piastri, there's something going on there which is a little bit confusing. But I want the easiest, the fastest driver and the easiest driver to manage of all time. So it'd probably be, one of these drivers you just put in and then they do the rest. That would be nice.
I just don't think those two often go hand in hand.
They don't.
Fastest are often precocious. And maybe a bit of ego to manage.
Ego and the politics, and also their demands in terms of, lifestyle and things they want to say publicly. I will say this, in that I was given some very good advice by someone when I got myself into a bit of a pickle, and I wish I'd had some more advice like this earlier in my career. But saying the wrong thing and getting into trouble with the press, I got some advice from a person who aided politicians, and she just basically advised me to save it for the book, was her comment. In other words, don't court controversy just for the sake of it. So things like that, advising drivers on how to handle the politics and the complexities of being in the public eye as well. I think there's a need for that for some drivers, especially young drivers coming up. Other drivers get a handle. Someone like Fernando Alonso is probably, there's no point. I mean, he understands all of that stuff anyway. So, and he speaks for himself, as does Lewis. It's a very interesting challenge. And there are a couple of people who are managers in our sport who you never hear from, like someone like Nicholas Todd. He absolutely keeps his mouth shut and does not get involved in the front, being in the limelight at all. But he's quietly working behind the scenes with his stable of drivers, usually Ferrari drivers or Alfa Romeo drivers.
Well, I think the old adage, never complain or explain, can actually get you very far in life. Or as Ronan Keating would put it, you say it best. And you say nothing at all.
Yeah, but that's the problem, isn't it? Is you're then you're accused of being boring, but you can't please everyone.
Worked okay for Kimi.
Kimi had his special charm, didn't he? Leave me alone, I know what I'm doing. That's the only thing I can remember him saying, really. That and give me my gloves.
Damon, can I say something controversial? I think with a different manager, you would have stayed at Williams in 1997.
You should have said so at the time, Tom.
I think we missed the boat there. I think we missed that opportunity. Yeah, so that's a really good point. I didn't perhaps manage myself very well. So I probably am not the best person to manage someone else either. But, you know, I've learned a lot in that time between being a Formula One driver and listening to a very interesting point. I love listening to your Beyond the Grids, Tom, is listening to drivers. And quite often they say exactly this. They wish they'd had a better manager. Points in their career where they took the wrong decision, or they believe someone who was telling them something, and they just missed out on opportunities. And there's a whole bunch of really great drivers who we never saw the best of because...
Well, yeah. Guys, if the three of us had been managing Jean Alesi, I think his career could have gone very differently. He actually signed for Williams in 1991... Or for 1991.
Yeah, he could have stopped me from getting into Formula One.
And he then elected to go to Ferrari instead. Now, I think the three of us would have said, Jean, you need Williams. And I think he'd be a multiple race winner, not just that one win in Canada in 1995, if we'd been in charge.
Yeah, it's a whole load of what-ifs in this. Subject matter, isn't there? You know, drivers going and taking decisions, as we've been discussing all of this podcast about the driver movements during the summer break, you know, and now we're pondering, and it's very difficult from the inside to see what the right thing to do is. And that's why, you know, I did used to read what the journalists were saying, because you get an outside perspective on your situation. Sometimes it's quite painful to read that stuff, but you know, you have to be able to get some perspective. You know, you're the insect, if you like, inside the jar.
And I think what is being said and written about drivers does influence teams as well.
Oh yeah, completely. I mean, you know, what shocked me actually quite a lot as a driver was they would sign people who I didn't think was a particularly good driver. And I'd go, why would they sign that? And it's because the driver's been hyped by the press. The press fall in love with this particular person because they got sideways coming out of a corner, you know, and didn't spin off or something, you know, it does happen, you know. But so the media is a useful tool in hyping drivers. I mean, if you think about, you know, why Kimi he's completely skipped the junior formulas and went straight from F2 straight into F1.
Now, Formula Renault straight into F1.
Beg your pardon, you're right, it was Formula Renault. So he completely missed out the ladder up to F1, but because he had some mystique about him. But then that was well-placed mystique, as we found out. Who would I manage was the question. Somewhere out there, there's a driver who's going to win 10 world championships and cause no trouble along the way, and that's the guy I'm going to manage.
Okay, our second question comes from Jordan.
A beautiful day to you all. And now that the silly season is also in full swing, it made me wonder, how do teams deal with drivers that are on the way out? When you left for Arrows after your championship-winning season, did they allow you to drive the FW19 for testing purposes, or the new Renault engine for 97, or was it all withheld from you because you were about to leave for the competition? All the best from Jordan.
Yeah, you basically hit the nail on the head. Once you've announced that you will no longer be with the team, you're not privy to their plans for the future. So that might deprive you of testing opportunities. In my day, when we went testing, they now have simulators and stuff. But yeah, you are not going to be given quite the same access. And what can you do? You can't sit there in the debrief room and go, I need to find out more about what the other driver is doing, because they're now focusing on the future. So... The doors do slam shut slightly, and it can make the remaining races slightly awkward.
I think you're right. I think it was perhaps more of a thing when you did lots of testing back in the day. In fact, it would have probably been a good thing, because it meant, no, Damon, we don't want you to test in Barcelona next week. Stay home.
You're on holiday. Yeah. as you slowly sink into the sunset.
Whereas so much of what the drivers do now is race based, that and at the races, they're not really testing that much. I think of Bottas last year. He was asked a couple of times, you know, now it's been announced that you're going to Alfa Romeo. How different is it within the team? And he said, well, not really, because it's all about getting the maximum result for the team on each given weekend. And he's part of all of those discussions.
I should add that actually, my retirement from Williams was announced before the end of the season, they can continue to put in every effort to help me
win races, because clearly it was in their interest as well. So it wasn't like they backed out. Jordan, thanks for that question. That got us thinking. And if you have more questions, then please send them to askdamon@f1.com and send it as an audio file. And we will play you asking your question on the show.
So come on then, who's organised? Who has packed for Spa?
Well, I'm not going, Natalie, but if I was going, I'd take a wetsuit.
Oh, that would be good, wouldn't it?
I'm only asking the question because I want to boast that I already have. I packed a week ago. I've been down at the seaside for my best mate's wedding and I had to pack before I went. God knows what I've put in my suitcase.
You just need an anorak, don't you, basically?
Yeah, you do. You need layers. It's hard.
I hope you take the right suitcase with you to Spa, Pinks. Otherwise, you're going to be sat presenting Sky's coverage in your swimsuit.
With my fascinator, my headband from the wedding. I tell you what, I am excited about it. It's such a purist track. It's iconic. It's everything you grew up loving about Formula One. And it's a real privilege to be going back there. But who's going to win the race? I'm going to go, or just to buy you a bit more time to think about it, George Russell.
I think it's going to be Lewis. I think if it's going to be anyone other than the obvious, you know, Max Verstappen victory, then I think I'm going to plump for Lewis because I feel it in my bones that he's going to win a race this year. I just think there could be situations at Spa that could fall into his lap a little bit.
It does feel like a win's round the corner for him, doesn't it?
Yeah, and he's won there four times, and teams make a big thing of momentum going into the summer break, don't they? Well, Mercedes had that because they would have had a front row lockout in Hungary had Hamilton not had that DRS problem in qualifying. So they had the momentum with the slight rule change, which should peg back Ferrari and Red Bull. Mercedes. Yeah, let's go for Mercedes. I'm not going to say which one.
You can't have two. That's not fair.
Well, I'm going to go for Max Verstappen then if I've got to go for one of the obvious ones. But we all want it to be Charles, actually, for the sake of the World Championship, spicing it up, keeping it going for as long as possible.
We do. We want to have a cliffhanger again, but I have to say, it's going to be some great races going to happen. You know, whatever happens, it's going to be some fantastic races. We've seen some brilliant races this season already, so there's still plenty to play for. So that's it, guys. We're back. Thanks very much for listening to the F1 Nation podcast, which is produced by Formula One in association with Audio Boom Studios. Natalie's off to Spa, Tom's off to Spa, and reporting back next Monday.
Great, guys. Fantastic to have the band back together. See you next week.
Yeah, see you. Let's hope it's a good race.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.